Board. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Scarlet Leadership Monthly Lunch and Leadership Call. My name is Tom Parrish, and if you'd like a copy of the slides after our presentation, just send me an email at tom@scarletleadership.com. Now, during the call, if you have questions, you can hit *7 to unmute your phone, or online, you can enter your questions in the box and hit submit. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to the world famous Joe Scarlet.
Hello, Tom, and hello, everybody. Today is another one of our conference calls. We've got a great topic today. It's all about change, titled Change Nirvana. And change is one of those topics that we all deal with all the time. Before I go into that a little bit further, though, let me mention to you that our next conference call will be Thursday, September 18th. Our speaker is going to be Doug Stone. Now, we've worked with Doug Stone for 8 or 9 years, and Doug's the author of the book called Difficult Conversations, and he's worked in all of our executive leadership classes, and he is absolutely an expert on how to deal with these difficult conversations we all have from time to time relative to performance problems, sometimes how to get a raise, sometimes personal issues, but it's all about how to handle these difficult conversations in the most constructive environment. So put that in your calendar, September 18th. He's a great speaker. It'll be a great subject. Today is Change Nirvana. We have Donna Griggs with us. Donna is an expert, a longtime expert in change and performance improvement. She has 25 years in the business. She's taught for us at the Leadership Institute, and when it comes to change, there's nobody better to talk about it than Donna. Change is, it's always tough, and when you have these situations, you can either wind up with great teamwork at the end, or you can wind up with chaos. You can either move forward or backward, but, you know, change is coming our way no matter what we think. The world is changing and changing at a faster pace than ever before, so the better we can handle change, the more effective we're going to be as leaders. Before we get started, I just might suggest to you, we're all going through change of one sort or one time or another, make note as we go through listening to Donna, and ask the questions about, you know, about your situation. And if you don't want to tell us what company you're from, who your name is, that's fine too, because sometimes you're in the middle of it right now and you don't want to offend people, so don't be shy about just saying, hey, this is anonymous, but here's my situation. In any case, let's turn it over now to Mary Fink, our hostess. Mary? Mary? Tom? Hello? Is anybody there? Well, and nobody's okay.
You've talked with top management or leadership, and you know that things are going on, and you have a meeting, and people just sit there, or do they?
Well, typically, that's a really good question. No, they don't usually sit there because they're very engaged in wanting to make something happen in a lot of cases if we're working with the right people. So where we start is we look at the end first. What are you trying to get to? And we use a tool that we call the GAR, and it stands for Goals, Assets, and Roadblocks. And what that allows us to do is start out, this is a mini SWOT analysis basically, but what it tends to do is it gets people out of a SWOT analysis mindset and more about, well, what we're really trying to accomplish is this. And so we put some metrics in place around their goals, and that's about a 5-minute exercise. Because a lot of times when we're brought in, they know what they're trying to accomplish. But sometimes the whole room doesn't know what they're trying to accomplish. So this is a great start. So we start with what's the goal, and then we move to the assets. So when we look at what are the assets in place to help you meet that goal, we look at several thought starter categories, and I believe it's on the bottom of the slide. And this can always have more categories, but we at least talk to me about your customers, talk to me about your finances, about your processes, your employees, your products and services, your technology, and then whatever else a company can think about in terms of what do we have in place right now to help us meet that goal. After we've done that, then, and one of the examples that you see here is when we do that, a lot of times people are excited about all the good things that are happening in their company. But we then move over to the roadblock side, and that's where it gets really interesting. Mm-hmm. So on the roadblock side of the house, that's where you have the this is what keeps us up at night kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what we try to do is help people understand that a roadblock is not a bad thing. It is if you removed something in those categories that would help you get the goal met faster, what types of things would those be? So they don't look at it as a real negative. So that's how we start helping identify what the issues actually are, because the roadblocks then become, if we remove these, we can really get to that goal faster. The big deal about that is we have to help them prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't prioritize those roadblocks, you tend to go off and try to get everything fixed at once, and then typically nothing gets fixed as a result.
Right. If we have too many goals, we don't accomplish any of them because we get scattered.
Exactly.
And we need to really focus on those things that are the most important.
Exactly.
So you come into an organization and we'll have a meeting, and I'm guessing that probably is a pretty lively meeting, especially starting with assets, because I'm starting with what I think we do well. Sometimes it's easier to talk about that than to divulge what our problems are.
Absolutely.
Or what our issues are. So then take us to the next step.
Well, at that point, after we prioritize, then we start looking at where do we begin.
Okay.
So when you look at where do we begin, a lot of times you can look at those roadblocks in one of two categories. Is this a game-changing strategy
mm-hmm.
type of thing that we need to do, or is this some low-hanging fruit that we can assign to someone?
The big issue,
right,
or little issue.
Exactly. And in the priorities, when they come out as those really big issues, a lot of times we're talking to the company in terms of a game-changing strategy. While they'll have huge impact in many cases, they're going to take longer. And a lot of times that's when you see change being done to people rather than people being involved with change. So when they get to be involved with change, that's a lot of the low-hanging fruit types of arenas. And we have a program called Quantificent that we do nothing but teach them from beginning to end how to deal with change so it's sustainable when we walk away.
Mm-hmm.
So we love the low-hanging fruit, but the game-changing strategy, they're needed in companies, absolutely.
Right.
So that the GAR still helps prioritize that.
But I would think if you had enough people involved in enough low-hanging fruit issues, pretty soon you might be at a strategic change.
Mary, you're exactly right. And in fact, we see millions of dollars saved in those low-hanging fruit
mm-hmm.
projects because of that,
mm-hmm.
because you have enough people who are going all in the same direction with that end goal in mind. It's amazing how quickly all of that can add up. And then you can get a culture of change
right.
as a result. Where a game-changing strategy doesn't give you a culture of change as easily.
No. It often creates a victim mentality. And I know when we talk about change in some of our other classes, one of the greatest caution that we give people is don't take on that victim mentality. Even if you feel like a victim, there are things that you can do. And so you need to be thinking about yourself as a pioneer rather than a victim. You need to be thinking about this as an unknown for sure, but it's going to take me someplace that could be really wonderful.
Exactly.
So I need to get in that mind frame.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is why you need a pretty solid model
mm-hmm.
to make those changes.
Mm-hmm. Do you have one?
Absolutely, Mary. I'm so glad you asked. Actually, the model that we use, we're certified in the ProSci Change Management Methodology, and their cornerstone is called the ADCAR model.
Okay.
And I'm going to just take you through what ADCAR is not a word, of course, but it's a great
mm-hmm.
word to remember after you've heard it a few times. The A stands for awareness. So did you make people aware of the change? Is
mm-hmm.
what that means.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make them aware? How many times do you tell them? In what ways do you tell them? The D stands for desire, and that means that people actually wanted to change. And a lot of times we see that that's a hard one to move through. So you have to really work hard at that, especially with those game-changing strategies.
Sometimes I don't know I want to change.
Right.
So it becomes, I have to become aware of it, but sometimes I need help with that.
Absolutely.
How does that happen?
Well, you have to figure out how they're going to benefit, first of all. So everybody really cares about what's in it for me. So you want me to change, well, what is that going to do for me?
Right.
So that's part of when you're putting together your whole strategy, you have to think through how is every single person going to benefit.
Right.
And be honest when there are no benefits. Because then if you're transparent, people at least say, well, it's just something that we have to do because.
Right.
And as long as people are honest, then it just it makes a huge difference so that they don't think somebody's trying to pull the wool over my eyes.
Exactly. Sometimes we don't have an option.
Right.
It could be regulatory.
Right.
It could be legal. It could be policy change.
Right.
In the organization, and we just have to go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you tell me what's been your experience in this area? Did you decide on changes and just sort of tell people they had to do it? I can't imagine that would have been your style or worked with them.
I have to confess this, but I'm trying to send an email to Tom Parrish to see if I'm still online, so I didn't pay attention to the last half a minute or so.
Well, that's okay. We're just talking about some people are told that change is coming, and that's okay in cases where I don't have an option. But if I have an option and I need to get my head around it, we talk about personal change preceding organizational change. So that's that step. I've got to get my head around what's in it for me or what's in it about me before I can help the organization move through. How did you manage change when you were the boss?
Well, I think that in any change, the more you communicate about the how, why, where, and do it openly and repeatedly and allow people to participate in asking you questions about where you're going, I think that's what makes all the difference in the world. When the change is a surprise or it seems impossible or you don't know what the final goals are, it leaves you in a state of not understanding the process. And we continue, whenever we're implementing change, we announced it as far ahead as we could, talked about it as much as we could, had as much Q&A as possible so that there was no misunderstanding about the goals and where we were going and the measurements, and then during the change process, continually update people. You know, we're supposed to be here. Here's where we really are. Here's how we're doing. And then celebrate success along the way. If somebody does a particularly good job in a change process, pat that person on the back in front of the others so that everybody's on the bandwagon headed down the same road toward change.
Exactly, and I know in some other models that I'm familiar with, the Q&A is vital because I can hear you say what's going to happen over and over and over, but I've probably got some little piece of that I've got a question about, and if you're not talking about it and I don't have an opportunity to ask you about it, then I'm just always going to be fretting about that particular thing. So a lot of two-way conversation is really important at this point.
It's very open that you have to, as the leader, you have to be very open. If somebody asks you a question you don't have an answer, don't try and make it up because they'll figure it out. You got to say, well, I don't know, I don't really know about that situation. I'll do all I can to find out, and the next time we're together, we'll talk about it as a group, or I'll talk to you individually.
Exactly. And if I know, but I can't tell you, I need to tell you that.
Yes.
You know, things are confidential until certain point of time, and so if I know it, and I can't tell you, that's just what I need to say rather than I don't know, because one's the truth and one isn't.
Yes.
I think in large organizational changes, that is so incredibly important, again, is the transparency. Because when you have that, everything else becomes much more believable.
Exactly.
So it's huge. So, Joe, you talked a lot about the awareness piece and the desire and helping institute that. And Mary, you made an excellent point about change as individuals. And one of the things that we see is a lot of times organizations believe that every single person will move through the change at exactly the same pace, which I don't understand because they don't think anything else happens at exactly the same pace. So that's a wish list kind of thing, but that's all it really is.
Right.
So you have to really look at everybody as an individual and what are they going to get for it, because not every individual is even motivated by the same things. So that's a desire piece. So we got the A and the D, and the K is knowledge. And knowledge means you've trained them in what you want them to do. Software rollouts are a really easy example of that. So I used to do a lot of work with IT groups who would say, oh, this is easy, it's intuitive. because they built it. So it was intuitive for them.
Yes.
So they didn't really see any reason for training at all. So we've done a lot of work in the how do we get the knowledge instilled in people, and again, that's on an individual basis too. And you all know the training that is an event is never going to stick. So as part of the change management strategy, how do we incorporate that knowledge to make sure that they are getting what they need to support the change? Mm-hmm. The A stands for ability. So the second A is ability, and ability means a couple of different things. It is the ability to sustain this change. So, Joe, you talked about the metrics. You are looking at metrics. You're seeing what's happening. How is it happening? That's one piece of ability to sustain so that everybody has that as a focal point. And the other piece that I see is a raw talent kind of piece. So, for instance, I always tell a joke about I've taken accounting classes in college, but many years ago. But if anybody tried to put me into a CFO role, I'd only last until the morning, and that's only if I was in meetings. By the afternoon, if I was expected to actually do CFO-ish kind of things, they would go, you're not really cut out for this, because that raw talent, that ability is not there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big thing with change in a lot of companies is if you're going to be changing the way people are doing their jobs or the knowledge that they need to do their job, sometimes you have to look and see, are we asking them to be in a position where they don't have the ability to really succeed? So that's another piece of it's not just how do we roll out change, it's how do we protect the people at the same time and make sure they're okay. The last piece is reinforcement. And Joe, you talked about reinforcement and recognizing people, which I absolutely love. Because in the reinforcement piece, that's the way that you can really hammer home why this is going to work. I see the reinforcement in two ways, and one of them is, of course, the positive. And then the other one is if you have somebody who is continuously poisoning everything, no matter what you've done, no matter how much counseling you have, no matter whatever, you have to look at what the negative reinforcement is going to be for that. Because if you do nothing, it actually hurts the morale of everyone. So when we're planning for any big changes in a company, we always have to look at all of that and expect up front that there will be resistance. And so how are we going to deal with that resistance? And when you start to deal with it, you just put into execution what you've already planned for. So it makes it a lot easier and less emotional. So that's our phase. Go ahead, Joe.
What I've found on the if you get people that are actively fighting against the change, you got to take them aside individually and have a talk with them, and if they don't come around and at least become a positive influence on the team or at least a neutral influence, you got to just pull them off and put them somewhere else or give them their walking papers
right.
Or something. But you can't.
We
undergoing a change. You can't tolerate somebody throwing hand grenades in the process while you're trying to get things done.
That's a perfect point, Joe, and we refer to that as the public hanging, but we try not to ever have that happen. One of the things that we found really effective is when you're starting to look at what kind of resistance do you think we're going to have, you're always going to know who those pockets of people are who are going to be resistant. You always can pinpoint who the thought leader among that resistance is, so who is your power player there? And a lot of times, if you'll involve them from the get-go and start to ask them to help you with things, they'll start to tell you where they think problems might be. And when you have them help you come up with solutions, not only do you neutralize them, but you turn them into somebody who is part of the army that's going to help you make the change. And that's been the most successful thing that can be done.
But it doesn't just happen. You have to be intentional about bringing that about.
Yes, every bit of a change management strategy has to be completely intentional, and if it's accidental, it's probably going to accidentally work or not.
Or not. Or not last.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. So this sounds like a great model. I know we're going to reference a book a little later on, but I can't believe it's as wonderful as you're saying that there are not, that we don't run into issues. What kind of problems or issues do people run into? Where do they run into trouble with this?
So every single change that I've ever been involved in for 26 years have been issues. There is nothing smooth about change because those people happen to be involved with it.
Right.
So as a result, what we see is the model is not the make it or break it. It's how you address the model. So in terms of pitfalls, three of the things that we see are if you don't have top-down buy-in, then don't even bother because everybody says, well, they don't believe it. Why should I? So that ruins every bit of your change and any good intentions that come anywhere else. So that is absolutely key is to have top-down buy-in. The second one is, and Joe, you refer to this, is a feedback mechanism because you have to have a way to take the pulse of people and what's going on and what are they thinking. And that's throughout the entire change, not just at the end, because you can make little adjustments throughout the change that will make it incredibly, incredibly successful. And the third piece is accountability, which ties really, really tightly into the reinforcement. And we look at accountability as three C's. The first one is clarity. So make sure you are 100% clear on what it is that you're asking for and your expectations are. The second piece of it is communication. And that means that you're going to tell people about what you think, which is really, it fits very well into this model, into the awareness piece. So in the communication piece, what I hear a lot of is, well, we've already told them, I can't believe they haven't done this. But it takes 5 to 7 times of people really, really hearing what that message is. And that doesn't mean 5 emails that are copied emails and pasted into their to their email box. So it's different ways that you give them the message. One of the really important things that I see in a lot of companies is they want everybody to be able to deliver a speech kind of thing when there's a big game-changing strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens with that is people really only want to hear from 2 different people. And one is the top level, so it's the CEO. Why are we doing this and what's it going to do for our company? And the second person they want to hear from is their immediate supervisor. And they want to know from him or her what it is that this is going to do to me or for me. And everybody else is just noise. So you can almost over-communicate if it's the wrong people, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So that communication piece is incredibly important, and who communicates it is just as critical. And the third part is the commitment. And that's the commitment to actually stay the course. Change is never easy, and sometimes, especially I think since the recession, we see so many people doing so many different jobs that they weren't doing before, and it's very difficult not to have what I call the shiny new object. You know, let's go this direction, let's go that direction. Well, the whole thing is if you're trying to make a change happen, you absolutely have to be committed to it, and that's probably the one in addition to no top-down buy-in that can ruin your change, anything good that's happening.
Great. I have a question from a listener, and that is, so what if I don't see buy-in from my top leaders? And what if it's not a change that is, and I'm adding this part, but what if it's not a change that's initiated at the top? Maybe it's a departmental something. And I'm not seeing the buy-in by either the top person in my department or the top person in the organization. I mean, a lot of times we hear people say, I'd like to do this, but I know my company will never do this. And so my advice to them is do what you can in your corner of the world. And hopefully the person in charge of your corner of the world, if it's not you, will have buy-in. But what if I don't have that?
Well, one of the things that we see a lot of is people are going in a lot of different directions trying to make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
If you start linking everything that you're doing up to the goals of the company, that's why we do that GAR very first.
Mm-hmm.
What is our end goal? What are we trying to accomplish as a company, as a department? And so when I'm talking to people and they say, well, we want this change to happen, but we don't have buy-in, the first thing we start to do is try to figure out how does it link up to the company goals.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, then we start asking questions like, what is this change going to do for
you? It's a different issue then.
It's a different issue.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay.
Does that help?
Absolutely it does. So given all this good information, you know, and you've talked to me, and I know that it's up to me, what keeps me from changing? What keeps me from just jumping on board and saying, I'm there? Put me in. I'm ready.
I want to play, too.
I want to play, too. That's right.
Well, I want to talk about some things. It's not necessarily change. It's the reason change doesn't happen. But it may not be because you've just said, I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
It's natural in a lot of cases. So I'm going to give you 5 change inhibitors. The first one, and I think that's a really nice way to say it, inhibitors.
Yes.
The first one is, if you think about going back and forth to work every day, you probably on some days don't remember if you even stopped at all the stoplights. Did I go through that and it was red? What happened? So what that means is what you see every day and what you're used to, you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, when I have clients that will say, how come I can go into their department and find these 5 things and ask, why didn't you do that? Why didn't you find this?
Why didn't you fix that?
Yeah, it's because they don't see it. They're seeing it every day, so they don't see it. So one of the things that we recommend is have somebody who's never seen that before, have a team member from another department come over and just observe things, and you'll be shocked at what they'll discover that the people who do this every day haven't, because they don't stop and say, how can I get better?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, getting better causes them to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, they're not going to naturally do that.
Well, and not in today's environment where I've got 3 fewer people in my department than I had, and we're all covering that.
Yep. Exactly.
So I'm not looking for more work. I'm not looking for work that takes more time.
Exactly. The second one that keeps people from wanting to be involved, so not necessarily change, but wanting to be involved, is we have Susie in our department. And a lot of people have a Susie. And that Susie may be a woman or a man, but it's somebody who always volunteers for everything. And so as a result, Susie has 9 other peers in her department that let her volunteer for everything because they don't want to do any more work. Susie wants to move up in the company.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, she's going to do everything that she can to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And Susie's supervisor is incredibly happy because he can always or she can always depend on Susie to volunteer. What happens, though, is you have 9 people who are never stretching. You have 9 people who aren't learning anything. You have 9 people who are going to fly under the radar because they don't want to be tasked with other things. So whether that's good or bad, it just is.
Mm-hmm.
And if the supervisor continues to let that happen, Susie will probably get overloaded at some point and start dropping the ball.
Or get promoted and leave altogether.
Exactly. And then what?
And then what?
And then what? So the person that they have to hire to fill Susie's shoes has to also be able to take on every project,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So we find that in a lot of cases where somebody wants to be promoted badly and will do whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody else just says, hey, we're making the same amount of money. I'll let her do all that work. The third reason is we see a lot of times when people come up with really great ideas and they go to their supervisor and they say, hey, you know what? I really think we ought to do this because this just really needs to be fixed to make our customers really happy. The supervisor says, that's a great idea, Mary. Why don't you go do that? And Mary says, I don't know how, except Mary doesn't admit that she doesn't know how. So if at some point it keeps coming up, Mary, why haven't you done this? Mary, why haven't you done this? You're probably never going to say, because I don't know how. You'll find other ways around that. And what will happen is the next time you have a really great idea, you will be mute.
Yes.
So you will keep it to yourself. And so as a result, the thing is, if you don't teach people the skills, once they've said, I have a really great idea, they don't naturally have those skills in some cases, especially at lower levels.
Mm-hmm.
So once you teach them the skills of how do you figure out why is, you know, why are we having this issue and how do we fix it, they can become really, really excited about change at that point. Really energizes them.
It's a little bit of a dilemma because those are the folks that know the work best.
Exactly.
They're doing it.
Exactly.
And Joe always says those closest to the work know it better than anybody else. And yet, I might know what needs to be changed, but again, I don't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm. And what we do is we will talk to the top levels about in the GAR,
mm-hmm.
what are the goals and what's in the way. And then we'll assemble teams down at the lower levels whose hands are in that specific area,
mm-hmm.
who can then help to figure out what's going on, and actually we teach them to ride the horse. So we don't actually tell them what to do. We teach them how to think about what to do, and then we coach them through the entire implementation. And it's miraculous what you see. You see team building. You see every skill that people say, I wish my people had. But
and what a good feeling. Exactly. What a great confidence builder.
Exactly. And they're excited that they get to contribute to the bottom line, because at that level they don't see from my position to the bottom line in so many cases.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really exciting. The fourth reason that people really don't like change is the suggestion box that also doubles as a shredder. So the number of stories that I have about suggestion boxes is just incredible. But what happens is when you ask people for a suggestion, they're excited a lot of times, and they'll give you suggestions. And if nothing ever happens with those, even if you're not going to implement it, even if you're not going to implement it, you have to be able to say, here's our process of how we're receiving those, what we're going to do with them, how we're, and you can go back to the people and say, we really appreciate this, but we're not going to implement that right now, and here's why. They'll give you another suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take their suggestion and do nothing, and then go back and ask for another one in a week, 2 weeks, a month,
mm-hmm.
they may give you a second one, but when you do nothing with that one, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, when I see people who say, I don't know why our people don't tell us what they think, I start asking them, how do you get feedback? What do you do with it once you have it? And I think one of the most horrendous stories that I've ever had, I mean, I've got hundreds of these. It was a company that was, I believe, local, and they were a national company, and they closed down. And the guys who were at the very end were telling me about, they pulled the suggestion box off of the wall, which I couldn't believe there were suggestion boxes on walls anymore, but they pulled the suggestion box off of the wall, and there was 2.5 years of suggestions that floated out. And that evening, they started going through the suggestions. And when they did, they found 3 or 4, like within the first 10, that they said, if we would have done these, our company would still be open.
Wow.
It's absolutely amazing.
Wow.
And the bottom line, I know. I asked so many questions, I thought, no way. But after I heard some of them, yep, that would have worked. So at the bottom level, they see a lot that's wrong, and you can ask them questions. And if you don't do anything with the answers, you can't ask more than twice, typically. So that is a big reason. And the last one is the shiny new object, the changing priorities. And I see that as much as I see anything, because a lot of times companies have so many directions they're going. Everybody is spread in
mm-hmm.
so many different areas that it's really easy to say, well, let's not do that anymore. Let's do this. So it's staying the course and having the commitment to actually make something happen and bring it to fruition before you decide to steer the ship in a different direction. And that's probably, when I talk to employees, one of their biggest frustrations is we change all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to change.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is they're immune to change, and they don't even care because that's going to go away.
Well, it'll go away.
That's going
to never engage, because I know if I wait long enough, I won't have to.
All I need to do is last this for 1 week.
Exactly. And something else will come along.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Well, Joe, we've been talking for a long time. Do you have any comments to make about some of these things? Did you have a suggestion, Bob?
As always, I have a few comments. As things are getting reinforced, I think it's important for the most senior people, I don't know, maybe the CEO or may not, depending on the circumstances, to stay engaged and stay engaged in the process, walk around, talk to people, listen, show support and show understanding, and sometimes root out differences of opinion or lack of communication or poor communication. When senior leadership says, here's what we're going to do, gives a little speech and goes away and disappears, it undermines the support for the process. And I always tried to get to anytime we're doing anything really significant, I'd stay as engaged as possible. I was thinking back to an enormous change we made in our company a long, long time ago in switching from marketing to farmers to marketing to hobby farmers. And a lot of our store managers were, you know, they were old farm guys, and, you know, they knew the farm business and so on. And this newfangled idea of marketing to hobby farmers was sort of strange to them. Well, we found that the way to convince them that it was the right thing to do was just to share the numbers with them. You know, you used to sell 5 farm implements. Now we're selling 10 riding lawnmowers. And just to continue to make those statistical comparisons and just present evidence of why this change works. And as we did that, more and more of these fellows would jump on the bandwagon and become very supportive of what we're doing. So I guess making change work is more about communication than anything else, and engagement and support from the most senior levels. And the more communication that's accurate, the better.
And I think the other thing, Joe, especially for change that's top down, because there are some of those. I know you've talked on these calls before about one of the worst decisions that you were involved in, and that was a software changeover. And to recognize it early, to own it, and then to stay involved as you make the correction is also huge.
Yes, if there's anybody from Tractor Supply on the line, I'm sure they recall or will have heard stories about the SAP implementation, which was horrendous.
Right. But exactly.
We stuck with it and made it work, and supported everybody involved in the process all along the way.
Bought a lot of pizzas, didn't you?
That's right. Bought them and delivered them.
Did you have a suggestion box at Tractor?
I don't think so. I think our philosophy there was to get everybody to open their own mind and to listen to the people that work for them and to probe for questions. And I modeled that behavior on my road trips all the time. And then subsequently, we'd see regional managers and others modeling the same behavior. One of the things we did as we grew that helped that process is we dubbed everybody in the company who had a leadership role. Not only are you district manager, regional manager, or warehouse manager, whatever, you also are the minister of culture for your business unit. And we hammer away at that pretty repeatedly, and people understood that, you know, I'm not just the leader of this group. I am also responsible for the culture. Well, our culture at Tractor Supply was very much one of listening and getting ideas from the people on the front lines, because we believe the people closest to the work in most cases knew the most about it, and the better we were able to listen to them, the more effectively we could run the business and make decisions.
Right. Don, I have a question about one of your reasons that people resist change or don't get involved in change, and that is back to Susie. You know, we all have one, and somebody always raises their hand and says, I'll do it. How can I, as the manager of that department, help spread the work around, help Susie understand that she doesn't have to take on everything that comes along, that, yes, she's in my sight, but she doesn't have to do it all, because at some point, as you said, it won't all be done well. And also let other people know that it's everybody's responsibility to pick some of this up.
That's a really great question. One of the biggest challenges...
Hey, hold on. It's not my question.
Well, whoever asked it, it's a great question. One of the biggest challenges is whenever Susie's been volunteering for everything, mm-hmm. and her supervisor's been letting her, the very first thing they have to do is go to Susie and say, here's what I'm going to start doing because I really appreciate you and all of the work that you've done. However, I need other people to start helping out with some of these things too. If you don't do that, Susie's going to feel like, how come you're not choosing me anymore? Do you not like me anymore?
Right.
What have I done to you?
Yeah, all of a sudden now I'm right. insecure.
So that is absolutely key in order to help that. The second thing is, depending on what the projects are, depending on what the special initiatives that you need people for, you should have an idea of what the talents, the raw talents of every single person in your department are. So it should be an expectation that during the performance appraisal process, or whenever that is, at least once or twice a year, you should be exploring those talents and how that person is going to start utilizing those talents more. And then you can have an agreement that you want to have projects, have them buy into it before the project hits, so that this is an expectation in your area that everybody is just going to do this. When you can do that, it's not nearly as painful to say, yeah, I think that's a good idea if I don't have a project right now.
Exactly. Exactly.
If you set them up, and that's part of the secret of change, is you set them up with here's what's coming
mm-hmm.
way before it gets there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not nearly as hard once it does mm-hmm. get there. So that's a great question.
Star 7, if you're on the phone and online, enter your suggestion in the box and hit submit. And what questions do you have? While we're waiting for inspiration, Donna, I know you referenced a book about ADCAR. Is it the same name? It is. Is it not?
Yeah. Actually, ProSci has a website that gives tremendous amounts of information.
Okay.
And to spell it is ProSci. So not only do they have a book that you can order there, but they explain the ADCAR methodology. They go through and you can be certified by them in change management. So if your company has large change management needs on a regular basis, it's a great thing to do.
And this is not Donna's company, so
no.
She gets nothing for this. It's just information to have. I have an online question. What problem-solving or process improvement tools did you use at TSC? So, Joe, this is for you. I head up the business process management group for CHS here in Franklin, and we use a lean focus. So did you have a specific process that you used, Joe, or what?
As I was leaving the company in the last several years, my successor became very focused on lean, on the lean topic, and he was very into that. Prior to that, I would say we did not have a process that we simply worked together as teams and communicated the very best possible way we can. Lean management is very much a part of Tractor Supply's success today.
Right.
But I'm not sure I can get into any more detail on that because I don't think I know anymore.
Well, and I've heard you say that you made very few decisions on your own, so it was always a team effort and there was a lot of communication around any decision or problem that was being solved, right?
That would be very correct, yes.
Okay. What other questions out there? Joe, any other comments you want to make?
Change is a constant, and we've just got to get used to it. Those of you in leadership roles have got to just make sure that you over-communicate the process and listen. And sometimes you get people to parrot back to, you know, here's the change we're going to make, and tell me what you've heard.
So that
we get the communication two ways so there's no mistake about where we're going. Change never works smoothly. There are always hiccups along the way, and we just got to get ready for them. And that's one of the things you have to say to the team. You know, we know that change doesn't always work well, and there will be things that don't work out the way we expect along the way, and we're going to fix them as we go forward, and we just got to understand that that's going to happen.
Absolutely.
And as I think you just said there, the further ahead you can let people know something's coming, the more they can think about it, the more you can talk about it, and the more aligned you will be when the changes finally do take place. I thought change was a lot of fun. One of the compliments that one of the folks worked for me gave me one time, he said, Joe, I think you're a change agent. And change can be a lot of fun, and change often represents progress and process improvement and in some cases more sales and more profits. So it's sometimes it should represent more sales and or more profits.
Right.
So whoever you are, embrace change. It can be a lot of fun and sometimes a little frustrating.
Okay. Yes, it definitely can. We have one other question online. Please repeat the book title. And is the title, it's the acronym ADKAR,
A-D-K-A-R. And just get on ProSci's website, ProSci.com. And they have a variety of different products. So they have things for senior leadership. So it's an executive kind of walk-through change that's a much quicker. They train people to go through change. They train companies. They train consultants.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really about research and development,
mm-hmm.
and understanding what is change all about, how do people accept it, what makes it work, what kind of things don't make it work. So they're a phenomenal company that there's a lot of movement toward their methodologies.
Great. So if you're interested, the book, ADKAR, we have enjoyed very much having this conversation. Joe, I really appreciate you joining us remotely. I am going to send everybody a copy of the slides after the call, because there is some good information on the slides and you may not have had a chance to take notes or whatever, and so we will be sending those. As Joe said earlier, do you have something you want to close us with, Joe?
I don't know how much I don't know whether anybody heard what I had to say earlier in the call or not. But I just remind everybody that our next call is Thursday, September 18th. Doug Stone, the topic is Difficult Conversations. He's a great speaker. It's in a very important topic. And we all run into those issues along the way somewhere or another, with either personally or in business. Or, you know, we got performance issues to deal with. Doug will walk us through the process in a fabulous way. He wrote the best-selling book, Difficult Conversations. So mark your calendars, Thursday, September 18th.
And thank you, Donna, so much for being with us. It's been a great call.
Thank you. This has been a blast.
Thank all
of you. Thanks, Donna.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye-bye. Yeah.